From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
What we found is that the DNA broke up into small pieces. That means the microwave causes the DNA to break up. Now, this is a type of DNA damage which can be very serious because DNA damage has been linked to cancer.
Are cell phones hazardous to your health? Today we'll speak with two scientists and a man who believes his late wife's brain cancer was caused by her frequent cell phone use. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. After deliberating for barely 3 hours, a Memphis jury decided yesterday that slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was the victim of an assassination conspiracy and did not die at the hands of a lone gunman. The verdict in Shelby County Circuit Court came in a wrongful death lawsuit the King family filed last year against former Memphis cafe owner Lloyd Jowers, who claimed in 1993 that he conspired with others to kill King at the Lorraine Motel on April 4, 1968. The jury of 6 whites and 6 blacks awarded damages of $100. The family had sought a minimal sum because they said their motive was to search for the truth about the slaying, not to make money. This news from Oak Ridge, Tennessee. A chemical explosion at a nuclear weapons plant injured 10 workers, including one seriously, who were cleaning a welding area that had been shuttered since 1993. The Energy Department was investigating yesterday morning's explosion at the Y-12 nuclear weapons plant. The building where the explosion occurred houses a portion of the plant's enriched uranium operation, which was shut down for 5 days in November because of safety explosions. And from San Antonio, Texas, several thousand people, including students at 9 schools, were evacuated yesterday when a tanker truck turned over and spilled 5,000 gallons of hydrochloric acid on a highway near downtown San Antonio. Police said 50 people suffered respiratory problems from the thick white fumes that swept across the city as the caustic acid reacted with the road's concrete surface. Officials said people in an area about 10 square miles were asked to leave their homes or to stay indoors. City buses picked up the evacuees and took them to emergency shelters outside the danger zone. The U.S. prison population will top 2 million soon, costing taxpayers about $40 billion a year. This according to a nonprofit research group which advocates alternatives to incarceration. In releasing the new data, the Justice Policy Institute said more people have been put behind bars during the 1990s than in any other decade in history. The Reverend Jesse Jackson, criticizing school's zero-tolerance policies, asked the Clinton administration yesterday to look into whether minority students' rights to an education are being trampled in the name of discipline. In a meeting with Education Secretary Richard W. Riley, Jackson and other education and civil rights leaders urged the department to gather information, according to race, detailing the rising numbers of students being suspended and expelled from the nation's schools. The department's most recent data was from 1994, this according to the Reverend Jackson. Most people living in the streets or in public shelters can escape homelessness if they get help. This according to a report by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The study found that 60% of the homeless who live alone and more than 3/4 of those living in families were able to leave shelters for permanent housing after receiving aid with housing, health care, substance abuse, education, and or job training. The report's based on interviews with more than 4,000 people, most of them homeless. The State Department says it recognizes a father's right to assert his claim for the return of his 6-year-old son to Cuba. A spokesperson said U.S. officials would contact Juan Miguel Gonzalez and explain his rights in the case of his son, Elian. The statement followed demands by Cuba for the return of the boy, brought to shore in Florida by the Coast Guard November 25th, after his mother and other would-be refugees drowned in a failed attempt to reach the U.S. by boat. Israel and Syria welcomed yesterday the resumption of peace negotiations after a 3.5-year break, and a top Israeli official said he believes the new talks will end in a peace accord between the longtime enemies. President Clinton announced that the two nations, in a state of war since 1948, will resume negotiations in Washington next week. Syria has insisted that at the time talks broke off, Israel had promised to return the entire Golan Heights captured by Israel in the 1967 Mideast War. It has demanded talks resume at that point, while Israel has refused, saying no such promise was ever made. And France yesterday decided to maintain its ban on British beef imports over fears of mad cow disease, setting the stage for a legal battle with London. France's Food Safety Agency advised the government this week that new British and European measures reduce the risk of the illness known as mad cow disease, but do not eradicate it completely. The decision means France is continuing to defy an August ruling by the European Union to end a 3-year embargo on exports of British beef.
Listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, and I thought that I'd host today's program on my cell phone so I can go get a cup of coffee, take my clothes to the laundromat to wash that tear gas out after returning from the battle in Seattle.
Well, on second thought, I think I'll join you all today after doing some research into the effects of cell phones, so I'll come back onto the mic. Today we're going to talk to a whole roster of people who've been taking a look at cell phone safety. We're going to start off by going to the University of Washington to Dr. Henry Lai, who is a professor of bioengineering at UW in Seattle. Last week, in the midst of the battle in Seattle, it was revealed that his study found that cell phones could cause, of course, this needs further study, but cell phones could possibly cause long-term memory loss and the breaking up of DNA, which can lead to cancers and tumor. Late yesterday, I reached Dr. Lai on the telephone and asked him just what his cell phone study is all about.
Well, this is not exactly on cell phone. This is on the radiation that similar to the type that comes out from cell phone antenna. And what we did was that we have a swimming pool, which is about 6 feet in diameter. And this is a small platform, which is submerged in the water. And we put animal one at a time into the water, and then the animal will eventually find the platform, and it will go directly to the platform once they put it in. So they learn where the platform is located. And in another group of animals, we exposed them to this microwave radiation, and we found that they have problem remembering where the platform is.
How did you expose them to the radiation?
Now, these are exposed to something. The animals are exposed to something called a wave guide. This is basically a cylindrical tube that we pass the microwave from one end to the other end, and the animal is sitting in this waveguide, and then they absorb the energy.
And it's
so the whole body will be exposed to the microwaves.
And these are microwaves that are similar to those that emanate from the antenna of a cell phone?
Yeah, well, it's the cell phone antenna emits basically microwaves. But at a different frequency that we use in our experiment.
Now, these are tiny rats as compared to human beings.
Uh-huh.
You expose them to the same amount of microwave radiation that we would get in an hour of phone use?
That is a very difficult question to answer because the situation is quite different. Because when you use a cell phone, only part of the head is exposed to the radiation. But in our case, we expose the whole animal to the radiation. And now that we cannot do it partial exposure because we don't have small cell phones. And then even though we have phones, we still need to teach animals to talk. Because otherwise the radiation will not come out unless you talk to the, into the phone.
But you could be talking to them on the phone, right?
No. If you're receiving something from the phone, you, the phone does not emit radiation. So when you're listening, the phone is receiving radiation from the from the outside. So only when one talks, the cell phone will emit the radiation.
But isn't it just as dangerous to receive the radiation?
No. The thing is the radiation that reaches the cell phone is very, very low. In the case of emitting, so when you talk into the phone will emit the radiation. Now, but the antenna is very close to the head, so that's why it's so intense. And in the case of cell phones, almost 70% of the radiation that comes out from the antenna is absorbed by the head. Or the hand of the speaker, the user.
It's very rare to see a cell phone study, certainly one that is critical. What caused you to do this study?
Well, we have been doing this type of research for more than 20 years now. And the original goal was not to look at cell phones. The cell phone picture just comes in and came in the last 5-6 years. Originally, we were looking at radars and microwave ovens.
How does a cell phone, in terms of emitting radiation, compare to a microwave oven?
Well, it's two different conditions. But the microwave ovens generate very high intensity microwave. That's why you can cook food. But the energy is contained inside the microwave because the door is shielded. Leakage, but in the cell phone situation, you have the antenna is open, and the second thing is it's kept at a very close distance from the body tissue. That's the head, and there's quite a lot of absorption. So you're talking about two things. One is high intensity, but not very. High intensity inside, but they are contained inside the microwave oven and not emitted out. But in the cell phone, you have a situation that they're emitted openly and is absorbed by body tissue.
We're talking to Dr. Henry Lai, a University of Washington bioengineer, who is publishing a report on the effect of microwave radiation on rats, saying that the radiation has an effect on their long-term memory. And what about the second effect, the effect on DNA?
Oh, well, the DNA study was published in 1995, I think. The study actually was very similar to what we did. We exposed these rats to the same type of microwaves. And then after the exposure, we took the cells from brains, from the animal, and then we isolated the DNA from the cells, and then we look at the DNA under the microscope. What we found is that the DNA broke up into small pieces. That means the microwave causes the DNA to break up. Now, this is a type of DNA damage which can be very serious because DNA damage has been linked to cancer and tumors.
All right. Well, how does exposing rats to microwave radiation compare to humans receiving this? I mean, if you're exposing them to the same amount that a human mm-hmm. receives in an hour on a cell phone, they're right. much tinier.
Yeah. Well, it's not. It's not how big or how small. The body is how much energy is deposited in the tissue. So in the case of DNA, I think it's more clear-cut because human DNA and rat DNA are basically the same. The molecules are very similar. So if you see DNA damage in rats, it's very likely that you can see the same effect in humans.
Professor Henry Lai is a professor of bioengineering at the University of Washington, Seattle. His study on microwave radiation and its effects on rats will be published in the January edition of the journal Bioelectromagnetics. And if you haven't turned off your cell phone already, stay with us for the whole show. Try to listen at least with one ear to what we will bring you in this hour. We have been trying to get a representative of the cell phone industry on, but it has been near impossible. So right now, we're going to go to David Renard, who is the husband of Susan Ellen Renard, who died of a brain tumor in 1992. David Renard's appearance in the Larry King Live Show of 1992 started people talking. He was one of the first people to talk about the potential dangers of cell phone use. He appeared on the show after filing a lawsuit against NEC, a cell phone company, and other companies, alleging that his late wife's tumor was caused in part by her use of a cell phone. The show, the Larry King Live Show that David Renard appeared on, caused nationwide concern. At the time, there were 15 million cell phone users in the United States. The day after the show, the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association, the CTIA, went on the offensive with industry executives claiming that thousands of studies had proved that cell phone use was safe. The association hired Dr. George Carlo, a public health scientist with experience as an industry researcher, to conduct health studies. But first, let's turn to David Renard. We'll be speaking with Dr. Carlo in a minute. David Renard, tell us about your wife and the lawsuit that you filed.
This all started in 1980 when my wife became pregnant, and she needed some way to communicate. She was instrumental in my business, and she had used the phone for about 18 months before we discovered the tumor. I think she was about 150 to maybe 200 minutes a month. And when the tumor was discovered, there were MRIs, and when we looked at those MRIs, we put the cellular phone directly up to the MRI and saw that the antenna and the tumor almost created a glow from the antenna if you looked at it. And I'm an ex-police officer. I'm just my natural instinct to investigate things, and we found a lot of interesting information about what had not been done about studying microwave radiation and some studies that actually existed.
What did you find?
Well, first of all, we found Military Handbook 238, which was a valuable document and had a lot of things to say about shipboard personnel in the military and the use of microwave and a lot of the medical and biological effects. Now, even though this document did not purport that the microwave caused cancer, it did say that other biological effects could arise from this type of thing. At that point, that document was totally canceled out and replaced with the industry document that basically allowed microwave radiation to be considered safe and didn't reference this document at all. And this microwave or military handbook 238 had been in effect for almost 40 years and had a lot of interesting information. Then the industry came in and said, well, we have a new standard and this is the new safety and everything's safe and wonderful and here we go. And we knew that wasn't true. We looked in the archives of the National Institute for Health, and we found that there was only one document about electromagnetic energy, and that document basically just was a summary that said the general consensus of scientists is that electromagnetic energy has no biological effect. Well, the interesting thing is you could look up acne pimples and find 1,000 studies. And yet, here we have electromagnetic energy, which is a medication that we all receive every single day, and they only had one paper on it.
Did David Renard, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, we want to talk about the shape and placement of your wife's tumor, where it was in her head. And then we're going to talk with scientists about the cell phone industry's research and independent research. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. Are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. Press a ringing cell phone to your ear and flick it on. Though you can't see it or feel it, microwave radiation is pummeling your skull. That much everyone in the scientific community agrees on. But the question is, are cellular telephone emissions bad for you? Well, David Renard thinks so. He's the husband of the late Susan Ellen Renard, who died of a brain tumor in 1992. And he's telling us his story. David Renard, where was your wife's brain tumor?
It was in an area left parietal. That's just behind and above the ear. It would be the location where the antenna would be in a normal conversation. The unit that she used, the antenna configuration, is a lot like many of the radios that are used today, where the antenna is so close to the brain that it's actually in your hair.
Just want to say, when you refer to the radio used today, you're talking about a cell phone.
That's correct.
You refer to cell phones as radios because that's really what they are?
That's correct, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting relationship that a lot of people aren't aware of, but a cell phone puts out over 1,000 times the amount of radiation that a microwave oven is allowed to leak. So I'm not even sure how they were able to pass allowing these to be used by the public.
Oh, just excuse me. My cell phone is ringing. I'll just have to listen to it. But I do want to say that after doing some of this research, I immediately got a hands-free, which is one of those earpieces. Of course, that means you then hold the phone against another part of your body, but that's another issue. What happened, David Renard, when you brought suit?
It caused quite a bit of commotion in the news media. I really deep down did not believe that a court was going to find electromagnetic energy guilty. This is really something for the scientific community, not the courtroom. But it seemed like the only way to get this information to the public and let people know. And you're right, the hands-free device is something that can dramatically lower the amount of energy that's placed against the brain. And you do not have to wear it on another part of your body. I use a cellular phone, I use a hands-free device, and quite typically I will put it on the table if I need to talk, or I'll put it up on the visor of the car, or I'll put it somewhere where I can get it about 2 feet away from me. And one of the benefits of using a hands-free device is that you are cut off from the carrier a lot less. If you've ever been cut off during a conversation, it's quite annoying. But since most of the energy from the phone is actually getting out and doing what it's supposed to do rather than being absorbed by the brain, then you're actually having a better communication with the carrier.
I want to get back to the lawsuit, and that is you lost the lawsuit?
Yes. Well, we lost it in a summary judgment. And after reading the federal judge's summary judgment, we decided as a legal action that the courts aren't going to hear this. They're just not going to do it. And you can't look at what happened in the court as we must not have had a case. We had an excellent case. We had five medical doctors with more initials after their name than the length of their name. and they had all testified, they had all been depositioned, and they only had one doctor whose only comment was that he and his colleagues just didn't believe that it would cause a problem.
Well, David Renard, after you appeared on the Larry King Live show in 1993, the cell phone industry went on the offensive. Industry executive claimed thousands of studies were done. The industry, the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association, hired Dr. George Carlo, a public health scientist, to conduct health studies. In 1995, Dr. Carlo found, though, that the cell phones interfere with cardiac pacemakers. The industry didn't like the findings and cut off funding for Dr. Carlo. Well, recently he was featured in a 2020 special on ABC on cell phones. And in that, producers tried to have several popular models of cell phones tested to determine the amount of radiation that was being absorbed by the brain. But when they tried to test the phones in the United States, they were turned down by every lab that does that kind of testing. It turns out the labs work for the industry. They finally were able to test the cell phones at a lab in Europe. The test showed that the vast majority of cell phones give off radiation at a higher dose than the maximum allowed by U.S. regulations. Dr. George Carlo joins us now from Washington, D.C., the public health scientist who was cut off by the cell phone industry, although he is working for them again. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Dr. Carlo.
Good morning.
Well, tell us how it worked. What exactly did you find?
We found, after 6 years of very focused study involving both laboratory experiments and studies of humans, some very interesting things, and actually some very surprising things, findings that were against the grain of what the science up to, until this time had concluded. The first thing we found was that there was very definite evidence of genetic damage in human blood following from exposure to the radiation from the cell phone's antenna. And we found this genetic damage in all of the types of phones that we tested, the analog phones, the digital phones, the cellular phones, and the PCS phones. This genetic damage seemed to follow a dose response. The more exposure to the radiation, the more of a genetic damage effect was found.
What is a PCS phone?
A PCS phone is the type of phone now that is operating in the 1900 megahertz frequency range. It is the, I guess it's becoming the most popular type of phone. These family packs that you see now advertised on the television and in the newspapers are primarily PCS phones that would allow people to talk with members of their family on the same line. So it's a more sophisticated form of communication. Cellular phones are in the 837 megahertz range. Now, we found the genetic damage in all of the types of phones that we tested. We also observed that in a very large cohort study, a study of cellular phone users, analog phone users, we found that there was a higher chance of dying from brain cancer among people who used the handheld phones as compared to people who used the cell phones, or the car phones, so that the handheld phones with the antenna next to your head carried with it an increased risk of dying from brain cancer. We also found that among people who reported using their phones for 6 years or more, there was a 50% increase in the risk of acoustic neuroma, which is a benign tumor of the acoustic nerve. But it's well within range of the exposure from the antenna. And that relationship followed a dose response as well.
Now, Dr. George Carlo, you keep saying we found and we found. Who is we? You run the Wireless Technology Research Group, but what part of this research did you do while working for the cell phone industry?
Okay, well, Wireless Technology Research, the entire operation was funded with $27 million from the wireless industry. That money was put into a trust account, and the money then was spent only on the work that we felt was appropriate to do. We were set up with support from the industry, but independent of the industry, following from a recommendation by the United States General Accounting Office in 1995. So so that this entire program was funded by the industry but conducted independently. We conducted, in the end, more than 50 studies and involved more than 200 scientists from around the world over a period of 6 years. This is the largest program of its type that was ever attempted.
When I was talking to Dr. Lai, I was asking him why there aren't more studies that we hear about that are independent. He said because in this country, the overwhelming number of studies are not done by the government. He said almost none. They're all funded privately by corporations.
Yeah, I think that that is one of the very important issues. And in terms of the work that we've done, I made sure that our work was independent, and I made sure that we were not going to be driven by what the industry would hope that this research would show, so that I can speak for our program and verify that it was absolutely independent and that what we have reported is the truth. The difficulty is that it is true that in the United States, and in fact around the world as well, even though there are research programs at the World Health Organization and at the European Commission, much of the funding for those programs comes from industry as well. So that if one of the litmus tests is that the funding not come from industry, there would be very little research done. The important thing is making sure that the work is done to the highest of scientific standards so that all of us who have an interest in a proper interpretation are able to see the information and see the data.
On what grounds were you able to go back to the cell phone industry and work for them? They cut you off after you found this problem with pacemakers.
Well, what happened there was that our program at that time was very broad-based. And that we were looking at any type of adverse effect coming from the use of a wireless phone. That included the interference with pacemakers. Incidentally, we're also concerned about interference with defibrillators, and that question still has not been answered. We looked at automobile accidents. We looked at base stations. We looked at the certification programs, the methods for measuring radiation coming from the phones. We had all of that as part of our program. And when the funding was interrupted, in the memorandum of understanding that allowed us to go forward, the industry pretty much stopped all of those programs other than the bioeffects programs. They said they wouldn't pay money for any of this. And I thought very seriously about leaving the program at the time. I felt that it was too much industry influence. However, the scientists who were involved in the program, and as I mentioned, we had hundreds of them from around the country and around the world, they encouraged me for the most part to continue on because their feeling was that if we didn't complete this program, that the industry would not move in a direction of independence ever again in terms of this research. And the scientists convinced me that we needed to keep going to do what we could do and make whatever contribution we could before the industry had the opportunity to cut off all funding altogether. So that's how we went forward with a very narrow scope, looking only at biological effects. It was my hope that other groups would pick up the parts of the program that were eliminated from our work.
We're talking to Dr. George Carlo, who is a public health scientist and heads up Wireless Technology Research Group. In this week, it's just been announced that Finnish mobile phone manufacturer Nokia has become Europe's most valuable company, knocking the British oil company BP Amoco off the top position. Estimates are in this country between 70 and 80 million people use cell phones in the United States. And I was just watching CNN, a report that seemed to begin to touch on the health issue, but then it said that it's the FDA that regulates the cell phones. So, if there are any problems, the Food and Drug Administration would pick that up. We're also joined in the studio by Louis Slessen, who is editor of Microwave News, which is a bi-monthly newsletter. Do we have anything to worry about with government regulation in this country? Are they protecting us?
Let me put it this way. The industry has nothing to worry about with government regulation. The FDA has stood back from this issue from day one, has really not wanted to get involved, and is still really not involved in any meaningful way.
What needs to be done?
We need to find out, that is, biologically speaking, whether or not the phones can have a health impact. We really have only scratched the surface of this problem at this point, although there is a lot of tantalizing and provocative evidence in the published literature that suggests that we might have a problem. With close to 1 billion people about to use these phones, it's time we found out.
Hmm. Now, there has just been an agreement reached between Elizabeth Jacobson, who is the person in charge of cell phone regulation at the Food and Drug Administration, and Thomas Wheeler, executive director of the CTIA, which is the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association. Under the agreement, the CTIA will fund the FDA to do additional safety studies. Are you concerned about this?
Let me correct two misstatements there. One is that it's an intent to do studies. There's no agreement yet. There's just an agreement to find an agreement. So we're still kind of many steps away from actually doing it. And the problem here is that the FDA will not do the studies. CTIA will do the studies. And FDA, again, is taking a backseat position. Also, the types of studies that are going to be done if this agreement is signed are extremely limited and do not address the most provocative studies that have been done. That is, the FDA is giving the industry another blank check to do what it wants with minimal regulatory interference.
What do you make of this 2020 going out trying to find a lab in this country who will do some cell phone test to monitor, to see what the level of low-level microwave radiation is to the brain, and no one would do it?
They would do it. What they wouldn't allow would be for ABC News to tell what the levels would be with specific phones. They were willing to test it as long as it was, you know, brand A and brand X and brand Y. But as soon as you were going to, they were, you know, 2020 wanted to say, this is a Nokia, this is a Motorola, and this is what they admit, they said no, and they had to go, as you said, to Germany to do the tests. Mm-hmm. Basically, it should be no surprise that the only people who pay, except for once in a blue moon, someone like ABC coming along, is the industry, the bread and butter of the consultants who measure. It's quite hard to do.
Let's talk about cell phone placement. I don't know how many people realize how critical that is when you're holding one of these radio transmitters to your head. And it was very interesting to hear Dr. Lai earlier at the University of Washington talking about the fact that the greatest emission is when you talk rather than when you're listening. 'Tis better to, I guess, receive than to give. But where you should hold the phone, or, of course, you might just say, throw the phone out.
The key message here is distance is your friend. The further the antenna is from your head, from your brain, from your eyes, the better off you are. I mean, the beauty of the hands-free system is that you move the phone away from your body.
And again, for folks who don't know what that is, it is the earpiece, using the earpiece, and it's called hands-free.
But, you know, depending on where the antenna is positioned on the phone can mean a huge difference in the amount of radiation that is delivered to you. I mean, I have thought for many years now that what we should have is consumer choice, and consumers should be able to buy a phone. On the box is the number, according to the test, much like tar and nicotine numbers for cigarettes, how much radiation you might be getting if you use the phone in an average way.
Are there safer phones and less safe phones?
Absolutely. I mean, the question is, the consumer can't find out which or which, because this information is essentially secret.
Can you tell us?
Well, you know, I don't even know. I mean, what I can tell you is that according to the 2020 tests and other tests that have been done in Europe, like the Motorola micro, StarTAC phone with the antenna that's tilted away is certainly going to deliver a lot less energy to the brain.
It's also important for people to know that you pulling out the antenna makes a big difference.
You should always pull out the antenna because you can basically reduce the amount of energy delivered to the body by a factor of 3.
Because
basically it's radiating out. I mean, it's a very interesting story. There was a company called Hagenuck in Germany that put out a low radiation phone that was cheap, that was much lower than everybody else, and within a few months they were out of business. They tried to corner the market and say, we have a sensible, cheap alternative so you get less radiation, they disappeared. One day, they were just gone. No one's been able to work out what happened to them.
What made them safer?
Basically, it was a different antenna design which made them less radiation.
Well, we're talking about cell phones for this hour. Are cell phones hazardous to your health? And we're going to continue this conversation and go abroad as well, because in Britain, I believe there is some more regulation of cell phones, perhaps, or it's dealt with differently than it is dealt with in the United States. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Our guests are Louis Slessen, who is editor of Microwave News, Dr. George Carlo, who is head of the Wireless Technology Research Group, and we've been speaking with David Renard, who really first alerted people in this country to the dangers of cell phones when his wife died of brain cancer, and he brought suit saying it was because of her cell phone use. You're listening to Pacific Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue with our discussion of cell phones in this country, about 80 million people use cell phones, and the number is ever increasing. I heard one report in the last few days that says soon, in the next few years, one in six people in the world will have a cell phone. In Britain, a BBC special on the program Panorama also highlighted the latest cell phone studies conducted in Sweden, which found that cell phone users are about 2.5 times as likely as non-users to suffer tumors in the lobes of the brain adjacent to their phone ears. We're joined right now by Alistair Phillips. In addition to our other guests, Dr. George Carlo of the Wireless Technology Research Group, Louis Slessen of the Microwave News, he's editor, as well as David Raynard, whose wife used a cell phone a great deal. She died of brain cancer. Alistair Phillips is with the group called Power Watch, which is a consumer group that deals with power lines and cell phones. Alistair says that phones can vary their power level by a factor of 1,000. British Medical Association conducted a study showing the effect of cell phone microwaves on the ear canal. Can you talk a little about whether it's better or worse in Britain when it comes to government regulation of cell phones and whether you're safer using them there?
Yes, good afternoon. I don't think there's really much odds. They're actually allowed to put slightly higher levels into the brain in this country, in the United Kingdom and in Europe. America has theoretically the tightest regulation on how much heating you can occur in the brain. But unfortunately, they allow the manufacturers to do their own tests.
How much what? How much heating?
It's in watts per kilogram of tissue. It's to do with how much the microwaves are actually heating your body cells. That's what the limits are set at the moment.
Hmm.
And in America, the level is actually the tightest in the world. But they allow the manufacturers to do their own tests, and the manufacturers can use the lowest values that they get. So it's all a bit of a mix-up at the moment. I mean, I don't think there's any safe level of putting microwaves into the side of your head. I think that's the important message to get across, that cell phones are probably okay, but use them as to what they're intended for, and that is messages that need to be passed when you're on the move.
Louis Slessen of Microwave News.
Alistair makes a very important point here, that the standards are still based on how much heating goes on in the brain, and the smart money says it's something much more complicated with the radiation interfering with the cellular processes in the brain, which have nothing to do with heating. So the standards are really yesterday's generation, and we're talking really about effects that are quite different.
Now, in this program that ran in Britain on the respected news magazine Panorama, they spent an unprecedented 40 minutes of airtime to the issue and called the report the mobile mystery. I'm actually looking at Microwave News, Louis Lesson's newsletter on non-ionizing radiation. And it talks about how the BBC ran promo for the show under the headline Fears Raised Over Mobile Phones. But later in the day, that headline had morphed into Mobile Phone Cancer Study Flawed. The change was prompted by a statement from the National Radiological Protection Board, the government's official advisory group, which argued the Swedish study lacked statistical precision to draw conclusions on specific aspects of phone use and tumor location, largely because it was based on a small number of cases. Is the NRPB, the National Radiological Protection Board, funded by the industry, Alistair?
Well, it's not theoretically funded by the industry, although it does do some work for the cellular phone industry. It's actually mainly funded by the taxpayer. But, I mean, a good example of how the regulatory people are in the pockets of industry is that there was a World Health Organization meeting held in the UK at the NRPB's headquarters a year ago, and I tried to go to it. It was a three-day workshop looking at what you should be measuring. What is in the important thing? Is it this SAR? Is it electric field? Is it whatever else? And I was not allowed to go, and I had an interesting letter from Mike Rapaccioli, the director of the World Health Program, saying that he'd invite me to other meetings where there weren't the same restrictions that there were on this one. Well, when the proceedings came out, it turned out that although it was a World Health Organization meeting, it was actually funded by the Mobile Manufacturers Association, the GSM Association, and National Grid, PLC, our major electricity private company. And they actually excluded any voices that were critical to the debate.
Dr. George Carlo, you still with us of the Wireless Technology Research Group.
Yes.
At this point, where do you see the place to apply the most pressure to get out information on cell phones?
Well, there are two things. The first is that in this country, we have this tremendous focus now on marketing phones to children. And there is an industry push toward selling young children phones. You can buy phones now with Disney characters on them. I even saw an advertisement on the Internet the other day for a pacifier for a little baby that's in the shape of a cellular phone. And with the information that we now have in hand with regard to functional genetic damage in human blood, coupled with other information suggesting that there's a potential health risk here, as well as information that clearly shows that children's heads receive more radiation than adult heads, I think that this marketing aimed at children is awful. It is just incomprehensible that this kind of thing can be going on. And unless the consumers speak to the industry in the marketplace, I'm not sure that much is going to happen short term. As Dr. Slesson points out, there are things that can be done right now to solve this problem. There should not be a phone sold without a headset anymore anywhere in the world. Every phone should have a headset as part of the package. Information about the emissions should be included in the package. Consumers need to have this information to make their own choices. I also believe that as the consumers begin to become more selective and to not be so mesmerized by the technology of the wireless phone, but become more critical of what this might be doing in terms of their own health, then I believe the regulatory bodies will follow. But as is the case here in the United States and certainly is the case in Europe as well, the regulatory authorities follow the public. They are not leaders. And unfortunately, we are in a position where the consumers need to lead here because there is no incentive for the industry to do the right thing unless the consumers hit them in the pocketbook.
I reported earlier Nokia becoming the most powerful company in Europe, surpassing the traditional multinationals like the oil companies, BP, Amoco. Also, this news from Stockholm, Microsoft and Sweden's LM Ericsson are forming a joint venture to develop products for consumers to access the Internet and send email from any wireless device. Now, what about that? What about these wireless devices? Even Palm Pilot now has the Palm 7, which you can just walk down the street and you click and it'll connect to the Internet and you can get your email and your stock prices, Dr. Louis Lesson.
Basically, the phone is going to turn into an information appliance. It's just not going to be for phone calls. It's going to be for any kind of information transfer. So basically, the future is you're going to be surrounded by antennas. Now, the good news is, because you probably have a screen, you'll probably have to move the phone away from your head so you can see the screen, which will be very good. On the other hand, you're going to have these antennas everywhere, and you can imagine children, you know, not knowing to keep the antenna away from their eyes when they're peering into the screen and things like that. So there's some silver linings here, but the bottom line is this technology is here to stay. It's extremely useful. People love it. And the solutions are easy if we decide to do anything about it. The question is, will consumers demand some action?
What about the satellite dishes that are used to, for the communication to take place? The cell phone, the microwave radiation hits the satellite dish and goes off to talk to another phone. In New York, there was recently a controversy about placing one of these satellite dishes on top of a school. How hot are these dishes?
Well, you have to make a distinction between send dishes, that is, transmit, and receive dishes. Receive dishes are what people have in their backyards. They're absolutely not a problem. They just collect. It's kind of like holding a magnifying glass under the sun. They're collecting radiation, no problem. The transmit dishes can be an extraordinary problem because they have to hit an antenna that's maybe 22,000 miles away, and that is a tremendous amount of power. You do not want to be near one of those when they're transmitting.
And are there any regulations around where these can be placed and how many are in the United States?
There are a great number, and basically the government is not interested in regulating microwave radiation of one form or another. I mean, the key issue here that people must understand is that however big the cell phone industry is, it's still small compared to the military involvement in microwave radiation. Many of the research, much of the research that is most troubling about cell phone radiation was done 25 years ago and still sits there in the literature unresolved because the military did the research and then the military cut off funding. The military is the largest user of this radiation and for communications, for radar, for electronic warfare, and they don't want any limits on their toys.
Do we know where they are, where the different sources of radiation are?
Often not, but, you know, go to the west side and see some of the warships that dock in New York Harbor. It's a miracle these boats or ships can stay afloat. They're so heavy with electronics. In fact, the amount of radiation on shipboard on the decks of these ships are so high that one wonders whether it's affecting the sailors.
Yeah, is there a higher cancer rate among the Navy?
There have been studies that indicate that, but again, you can't get the data. The military will not give you access to that information.
I want to go back to David Renard, who is the husband of Susan Ellen Renard, who was one of the first people to alert the public about the dangers of cell phones. As you've done your research over the years, I know you didn't intend to become a cell phone expert. What has most impressed you? What are the facts that you learned that you think are most suppressed?
Well, there's quite a bit of it's hard to say where this is going to go. I think the cellular industry has control of it. I think they're going to retain control of it. And I think if the public doesn't go into a store and say, I would like to buy the phone with the least amount of radiation, which one is that? And we're seeing people do that now. People are concerned about it. They're making choices. I recently went into a store that sells electronic equipment, and they were totally out of earpieces. And said that they are having a hard time getting them. I think people are making good decisions about the safety of their brain, and that's where we're going to see the greatest effect right now is the individual making the decision to keep themselves safe and still be able to communicate.
Dr. George Carlo, are we seeing more brain cancer in this country?
Well, brain cancer is a rare tumor, and I think that over time we have not seen a change in brain cancer in this country. But the interesting thing that we learned in our large brain cancer study was the following, that while when you look at the totality of brain tumors, in our study, for example, in Dr. Muscat's study, there was not an increased risk, that is an unfair comparison because only a small fraction of the brain cancers in our study were in range of exposure from the antenna. So that what that says is that if we're going to look at the link between wireless phones and brain cancer, we have to be very specific in the types of brain tumors we look at. We can only look at those tumors that are on the outside of the head that are in range of exposure. Unfortunately, the large study that the National Cancer Institute has underway now only has about 6 cases of the type of tumor that are of the most interest. And the large study that the International Agency for Research on Cancer has going in several countries, that's due out in the year 2005, also has a very small number of those cancers intended for the study. So that the unfortunate thing is that the scientific state of the art where we are today is probably not going to be changed much over the next 4 or 5 years. And that is something that is difficult to deal with because it means we have to make choices based on the information we now have in hand, and new information is not going to be forthcoming probably for a half dozen years.
I have to say someone is a heavy breather on the lines, and it particularly applies when we're talking about phones and cell phones. But I want to get some contact information for everyone so that our listeners can get more information. Alistair Phillips of PowerWatch, based in Britain, the consumer organization that deals with power lines and cell phones. How can people reach you? Do you have a website?
We have a website, www.powerwatch.org, and that has my email. I mean, one thing, two very quick points I'd like to make is one, hands-free kits are fine, but you need to hold the phone to the side of your body. If you put it on your belt or in a breast pocket, other important organs are getting irradiated with even higher levels of microwaves, so you do need to hold it to the side. Hmm. And secondly, there's a big military study done with Polish people showing after sort of 20-odd years of exposure to low levels of microwaves, there was a 14-fold increase in adult leukemias. Now, we won't know whether this is going to happen to the phone population for another 10 or 15 years. And our advice is, by all means, have one, but use it minimally. Only use it when you really need to.
Let me ask Louis Lesson, Microwave News. How can people get it? Do you have a website? Do you have a phone number?
People can find us on the web, www.microwavenews.com, and we put selected articles up on the web, and people can read them there.
Mm-hmm. And Microwave News is based here in New York City. Dr. George Carlo, the Wireless Technology Research Group in Washington.
Okay, two things. My phone number is area code 202-296-7000, and we also have a website, www.hrmgroup.org.
That's www.hrmgroup.org, although I am hesitant to give out all these websites now. It just makes me more interested in the conference that's coming up in the spring on Luddites. Well, that does it for today's program. If you'd like to order a cassette copy of today's program, you can call the Pacifica Archives at 1-800-735-0230, 1-800-735-0230. You can go to our website at www.democracynow.org, and there you can get all the phone numbers and websites that we just mentioned. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and David Love. Special thanks to Rosalie Hoffman, who helped us with yesterday's program and the battle in Seattle. Errol Maitland is our technical director. From the studios of WBAI in New York, I'm Amy Goodman. Tomorrow, a special on International Human Rights Day.